Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 7. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for co-host David Todd on this Monday is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Monday. Did you sleep fast?
Fast is the word. Not a lot of sleep last night. Trying to get some work done. Back at it at camp later today.
Yeah, the Steelers will be back at it at St. Vincent College on this Monday. It'll be their final practice before they have another day off, and then they'll get back at it to close out training camp Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So four practices are left. Where's the time gone, as they say? If you ask me sometimes during training camp, it doesn't move fast enough. But you and I definitely covered and recapped the practice on Sunday, so no sense really rehashing a lot of that. Everybody should be caught up with the injuries as well too. And you know, one thing I wanted to start with today that really haven't spent a lot of time on. I thought I was going to have more time to write about it since Friday night. I haven't, but in the grand scheme of things, there's not much to write or talk about with it. But I just wanted to cover it nonetheless. And that is the report that Jason LaConfora put out there. Actually, it was during the game, I think, Friday night. You know, between the Steelers and the Giants, him writing that the Steelers have been sniffing around the Los Angeles Rams, looking to possibly to trade for cornerback Trumaine Johnson. And, you know, look, all due respect to LaConfora, but there is a reason now he is writing for CBS and not on ESPN and not on NFL Network. The reliability of his work is just it's not there anymore. And it pains me that people put out reports like this because we have to write about them. And then here we are, we have to talk about them too. As cockamamie as they sound, we have to do that because, you know, if we don't, you know, somebody's going to call us on it and wonder why we haven't, because it's such a national level, I guess, news item and report. And, you know, if you've been following the Steelers for any amount of, you know, 5 years or more, you should have a good grasp on how this organization does business. And for them to even consider the validity of a report that states that the team would trade for a cornerback that's currently wearing the franchise tag of a little less than $17 million is absolutely outlandish. I mean, the degree of outlandishness is just, I can't quantify it, because there is no way on God's green earth is this going to happen. And I don't care. Throw any scenario at me. Trade Le'Veon Bell for Trumaine Johnson, and we know that's not going to happen. But even if you did that, it's not going to happen. Look, you're not going to trade for a rental player. And on top of that, this kid, as I said, is wearing a tag at nearly $17 million. The Steelers don't even have that much available salary cap space. I guess they're locking for it. Didn't think about that before he threw out this yarn. And in short, the Steelers would have to restructure a player or two or three just to get Trumaine Johnson, you know, to be able to fit him underneath the cap. And then there's the whole, what are you going to give up for a player such as him? You know, you look at this from every single angle, and it's just ridiculous. And it makes me wonder, if I threw something out like that, Alex made it up and threw it out there, I would be crucified. How come a guy like LaConfora throw that out there and nobody bat an eye at it except some basement blogger?
Woo, Dave, coming in hot here to start the podcast.
I didn't realize I didn't buckle up yet. Yeah, happy Monday.
No, I agree. The chances of this trade ever happening are so remote. And even in the wording of his report, he danced around the idea so much. What did he say? They just checked. What did he say? Sniffed around, I think. What was the wording?
Yes, I don't remember. Sniffed around.
What does that mean? That's not a phrase. That's not an actual, it means nothing. It's nonsensical. So that's his out card on that. I think someone compared it well to the quote-unquote interest that Stieglitz had in Darrell Revis several years ago when that clearly was not going to happen. Yeah, everyone would love a top-flight corner, but it's a lot easier to think about that than it is about how to actually acquire that kind of guy.
Right. I mean, look, I'd put more stock in the interest in Darrell Revis a few years ago than I would, this. It bottles my mind. Because how can you question a guy, according to sources? You throw that report out there, you say sniffing around, and then you say according to sources. Lockefor has been around long enough. Is anybody going to question him on such a thing? There's no way the Steelers were even sniffing around because if you traded for the guy, the deadline's passed. You can't work out a deal for him until after the season is over, much like they're as they are in the situation with Le'Veon Bell. You can't tell me that the Steelers are seriously consider or even thinking or sniffing around trading for a player on a one-year rental, because that's what it would be, okay?
Right.
And it just blows my mind that people come out with these reports like that, which, I mean, maybe he just has bad sources, okay? Maybe he needs to quit writing about – but here's the flip side to that. You write something about the Steelers with something along that magnitude, it's going to get clicks. It's going to get read. It's going to get talked about. It's going to get wrote about. It's going to get done exactly what we're doing right now. So, I guess in the world of, media having their problems, they got the desired result.
Yeah, we're talking about it now, aren't we? So I guess that's the goal. Yeah. Mission accomplished.
But it just... people have emailed me about this, throwing out, with all due respect, people, these are some silly suggestions you're giving me here. None of this is going to happen here. Bill Weaver, he sent us an email. What would you give for the Rams cornerback? What if the team feels Bell is going to continue to hold out into the season because he wants tag bumped up to $15 million? Tremaine alongside Burns at corner with D. Will and Connor at running back, or Cockrell and Burns with Bell at running back? Crazy, but are they frustrated enough with Bell? No, Bill, they're not frustrated enough with Bell. Mm-hmm. There's no way that any of this is going to happen. Bell will be in camp here before too long. He'll go on and play. Hopefully he stays healthy, has a good season. End of story. I mean, there's nothing more. You're not going to trade Bell for Tremaine Johnson and then turn around and, A, sign Tremaine to a long-term deal next offseason before you have to issue the tag, or B, put the franchise tag on him of, I don't know, 19 or whatever million. I mean, I hate to use we're dealing with the Chewbacca theory here. And if you don't know what that is, Google it. And I'll leave
the South Park reference.
Yeah. Why would a Wookiee, an 8-foot tall Wookiee, want to live on a planet Endor with 4-foot tall Ewoks? It does not make sense. I hate to get off on this hot item here, but it makes it even tougher when a report like this comes out. Then we have tons of readers and commenters and Twitter users and all trying to throw out all these ideas out there, folks. That's not going to happen. It's a silly, stupid, irresponsible report. All right, what's the next topic?
Ooh, Dave, you feel better now. Yeah. All out of your system.
Yeah,
you've been holding that up for a couple days, too. That's been bottled up inside.
It really is. My blood pressure might go down a little bit now. You know me, though. I'm not happy unless I'm unhappy, so.
Well, you're happy then, aren't you? You're ecstatic right now.
Exactly.
Oh, my.
Okay. We had a Keith Butler's been evidently talking to the media the last several days here. Probably not overly surprising some of the things that he said. One of the things that was quoted by Ray Fittipaldi, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, in essence, is if Cinquez Gulson can't stay on the field, we can't keep him. And does that surprise anybody? You know, Butler, the good thing about Keith Butler is I don't even know if he knows how to coach speak. You know, it comes out of his mouth, and it's like John Mitchell too. You know, I don't believe those two are good at coach speak because they're so damn brutally honest, and both are from the South. And you normally get that from those kind of people there. But he's upset that Cameron Sutton's not on the field yet. Of course, it looks like that's slowly starting to change here. Cinquez Gulson doesn't, appear. There's no signs that he's even close. And Butler wants to know what he has in these guys. And he did admit that prior to his latest injury, that Gulson looked good, but. You know, how many practices was that? You know, to me, the OTAs don't count. OTAs are for instruction and instruction only. Training camp is for you to show what you have. And so far, going on 3 years now, he hasn't made it through a full training camp practice. Yeah, look, people keep saying, oh, you guys are ready to give up on Gulson. What are you guys going to do when Gulson goes to the New England Patriots after he's cut and becomes a contributing player for them? Hey, good luck with it. You just can't keep guys because of pedigree and because of you think they can do this after 3 years in this league, right? I mean, at some point you got to pull the cord. And if Cinquez Gulson, let's say he gets healthy here, let's say he has a decent end of things here, and he still winds up getting cut. At this point, why even put him on the practice squad? Because he's going to get hurt, and he's going to end up on IR, and you're going to end up paying his salary all year again.
Right. When people ask me about, if Golson's practice squad eligible, while yes, he is, he's not going to land there in Pittsburgh, because if you're either going to keep him on the 53 or you're going to cut ties entirely. And, we're getting close to that latter part of just releasing him outright. It's disappointing. It's unfortunate. It's unlucky. It's been 7 practices in 3 years with a team. He's finished 5 of them, which is just remarkably unlucky. He's got the Marcus Wheaton, curse right now. Wheaton, what broke his pinky, I think, yesterday, too, with Chicago, after having his appendix removed. So it's just a black cloud over those guys, I guess. It's the craziest thing. But, there's the sunk cost theory that you can't keep putting into a guy just because you invested highly in the first place. The Buccaneers just cut their second round kicker that they traded up for from last year, and now he's gone. So eventually you got to recognize when it's time to cut ties. And if Gulson cannot get healthy, and it looks like he's still at least a couple days away, then you just got to move on.
Look, you and I like this kid coming out of Ole Miss. It's a shame.
I wasn't the craziest about him.
I liked him. I mean, I liked his physicality. I wasn't proclaiming him, the next shutdown corner, but I didn't mind the pick as much. I thought it was a round early. I think a lot of people were surprised that he went in the second round. I wouldn't be surprised if you could have got him in the third, I didn't mind the pick. The thing is we're never going to know what he is, because we haven't even seen him in a preseason game. I mean, haven't seen him finish a complete padded practice there. Like this video, the kid wasn't hurt at Ole Miss, but the old sum cost that you said there, and that's a good comparison. Putting it to what the Buccaneers just did with their kicker. Oh, and by the way, the Bears claimed him off waivers from the Buccaneers. You tell me you're going to work with a kicker that couldn't even kick in the state of Florida, and now you expect him to kick in a windy city such as Chicago? Yeah, good luck with that. Look, Cinquez Gulson might very well land on a practice squad of another team, but NFL teams don't have time, for reclamation projects. Now, might he be a candidate to end up on a futures squad next year? Sure, because that's the time that you bring those kind of guys in. You get good looks at them during the offseason. At that point, they're cheap. You hope they can make it through your all of your offseason program, and then you take them to camp with you as part of a 90-man roster where you don't have as much invested at that point. Mike Hilton, several teams already gave up on Mike Hilton. Well, here he is in camp now with the Steelers, and he's finding his way there. So, no, it's not the end of the career for Cinquez Golson. But as far as the Steelers go, there comes a time where you just got to crap or get off the pot.
Yeah, I got a train coming. So you tell me about Mike Hilton versus Brian Allen, what you've seen with both of those guys, kind of how you're feeling right now.
The thing is, with the limited amount of tape still, just one preseason game, Mike Hilton, not afraid to stick his face in the fan. I think we really saw that. I liked his overall awareness, his game awareness in that game against the Giants. To me, the most impressive play he had in that game was that 4th-and-1 run stop. Obviously, look, we don't have the all 22 to look at what he did completely in coverage. I don't remember exactly how many times was he even targeted there. Came off the edge with a nice delayed blitz and found his way to the quarterback, which is huge. Anytime you come, you want to get a pressure or get home. He did that. And special teams, I think it is easy to see on two or three situations him getting downfield and off the block, off the jam and downfield there. So I think a great first showing for him. As far as Brian Allen goes, I think you highlighted him playing the man, and not looking back at the ball and running, playing through the pocket of the receiver on that one deep throw. I think that was very, very encouraging thing right there. Was there much to speak of outside of that? A few nice, minor details in there. I got to admit, I haven't gone through the tape with him purposefully in mind as a subject. I've still got a week to go until the Falcons game. But overall, I like what Hilton did in that game and how could you not? And, Brian Allen definitely didn't disappoint.
Yeah, no, I was impressed with him. I think it's a continual improvement. Hilton's a guy that's been steady for a while now, going back to the spring, but Allen got off to that rough start, but his technique's improved a lot. And that deep ball really encouraged me, like I said, that he was a guy that, now is understanding you can't always look back for the football. If you're out of phase or if you're kind of, a step behind, you can't look back for the football all the time. You have to play the receiver. His eyes and his hands will take you to the football, and you can play through the pocket. So while, Hilton's been encouraging and he's kind of the talk of the town right now, and, we've been talking on Mike Hilton since well before camp started, and I was excited to interview him, and he was a really good guy to talk to. Brian Allen is a draft pick. He is fitting the mold of the Steelers' corner of what they're gravitating towards, and I think only do you agree that only one of those guys can make the 53-man roster coming out of camp?
Yeah, but look, I think Cody Sensabaugh's making this roster. I mean,
yes.
There's no two ways about it. William Gay's not going anywhere. You have your top two other than that. So, you basically, Cam Sutton, barring him being placed on IR, is going to make this team as well, too. I don't see this team keeping 11 total defensive backs. I only see him keeping 10. And if you're going to keep four safeties, I think it comes down to a battle between Hilton and Allen. The thing about Hilton is he does have, not that you would ever need it, God forbid, but he has played safety in the past. He's got a little bit more experience, obviously, albeit not much, but I mean, he's been around the NFL a little bit longer. I think he's a guy that you could throw out there in week one in a special team standpoint. God forbid you had to play him some in the slot. You could get, competent play out of him right now. So, and here's the thing, Carnell Lake, all these coaches now are dropping these comments about Mike Hilton that it really, really makes it, hard to believe that it's hype, as I like to say, hyperbole. And, you know, at this point right now, barring anything changing injury wise, Alex, I find it hard to believe that Mike Hilton's not going to make this roster.
No, I know that that's definitely been your stance. Let me ask you two questions, Dave. I'll go one at a time. I'll get your first answer, then I'll get the second.
Well, before we go there, real quick, while I'm remembering it here,
sure.
And we're talking about Brian Allen. What have you seen him from a press man versus a mirror, kind of a mirror man? You know, what is he excelling at the most in these one on ones or in seven on sevens or, you know, full 11 on 11s when he's up close to the line, coverage specifically?
Well, he certainly, there's no doubt he's more comfortable and he looks better when he's playing press man. When he has to play off man and zone coverage, you know, off ball, he's going to struggle. He's talked about it. It's not something he really did much at Utah. Utah is very much has the history of the big long corner, whether that's Sean Smith, Keith McGill, Brian Allen. I mean, the list goes on and on. So, you know, he is right now a press man kind of guy, kind of like Artie last year, where Artie was a lot better up close. And when you put him in off coverage, you know, he kind of struggled. You saw the one catch he allowed Brian Allen did against the Giants where that comeback route because he got beat by speed and, you know, gave up a lot of separation on the top of the route. So there's no question that Allen right now is a press man, and the closer and more physical he can play, the better he's going to play.
In other words, you want him jamming and bumping and running, much like Artie, his specialty coming out of Miami.
Yeah, it's not even that you have to have, you know, a Mel Blunt-style two-hand jam. It's just being able to play press, get your hips open by riding the receiver as he releases on his stem, being able to be in that hip-to-hip relationship and, you know, just staying in phase and tight coverage without having to read the route and break down and, you know, things like that. So it's not even that you have to be super physical. It's just about being close and losing your size to you create leverage and pin the receiver to the sideline and things like that.
And you're not going to want him to play mirror.
Where there's no
contact, you know, you're asking him just to read and run.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it's cover two and you're just trying to, you know, re-release, I think he'll do that fine. If it's straight man where you're not, you know, making a two-hand punch, but you're just, you know, jamming him a little bit and turning him to one side, and, you know, once the receiver passes, you punch with the off arm and you open your hips. I mean, I think he can do that fine.
All right, carry on with your questions.
I was going to ask you two things. I'll start with maybe the easier one. I don't know. I'll let you decide that. Is it impossible that this team keeps seven cornerbacks? I know you kind of alluded to it, but I'll ask it bluntly.
Well, I mean, look, nothing's impossible, right? I'm not going to sit here and guarantee that they won't keep 11. I mean, you're obviously still thinking they're going to keep four safeties, though, right?
At least. Have they kept 11 DBs in the past? We have to look this up.
Yeah.
6 and 5 in the past? Have they done that?
I'll have to go back. Well, they have kept five safeties before. I know that. But you know, have they kept six? I mean, have they ever kept seven corners?
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure they never kept seven corners. But if they've kept 11 safety or 11 DBs, then you could still say 11 is 11, regardless of how you get there.
Yeah. Boy, seven corners, a lot. And who, you know, you're not going to address all of them. Then it comes to the whole game day helmet thing, too, you know, and who you're going to have active and inactive on a weekly basis.
Sure. That's okay. Too. You let the competition decide that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a good problem to have. And if you go later at receiver, if you only go, we've debated seven wide receivers, so I think we can debate seven corners. If you go later at wide receiver, you only keep six. You go later at linebacker, you only keep nine total. You know, go eight offensive linemen. I think you open up spots. So, you know, it's something to kick around. Maybe that's a new idea to throw out there to the listeners.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We'll see. I mean, I'll have to go back and look when a initial 53 included 11 DBs.
Mm-hmm. It might have happened before. 6 and 5. It definitely was never 7. But, you know, 11 is 11, like I said. The other question is, who, as of today, and don't worry about inactive, active right now. Just think about who's on the roster. Who is the backup slot cornerback to William Gay?
Well, I mean, I'd have to kind of default to what you've been reporting right now. And I would assume that would be Mike Hilton.
Yeah. And if it isn't Hilton, then who would it be? Because that's what I struggle with when you say don't keep Hilton on the roster.
Right. Who would it be?
I think Sutton, but of course he's barely been playing.
Right. I mean, and that goes back to kind of, you know, dovetail and wrapping all this up into a bow here, going back to what Butler just said. You know, they don't really know what Cam Sutton can do right now, because you know, he went through OTAs, and most of the reports were him playing on the outside, right?
Right.
Okay. We get into training camp. There was a little bit of slot going on, right?
A very little bit, yeah. The second day that he got hurt,
or you know, early on, and then of course he gets hurt. So, look, I know this. I know you go back to you can go back and all the things said about how quick Cameron Sutton picks things up, and how he knows the defense, and how he knows everybody's role on the defense during his time at Tennessee. That's all great and fine, and at one point he's going to get to that. But I'm sorry, Dorothy, you're not in Tennessee anymore, right now. You know, he's got to get on the field. He's got to get practicing. The classroom work and the film work only goes so far. The mental reps, he's got to get out there. You know, at some point, we're already at the stage right now where it's hard, I think, visualizing him doing anything more than special teams during the first quarter of the season. If he continues to miss time, I think we're running into kind of an Artie Burns situation last year, where you're really going to, you know, if you need him, you're going to have to hope you can get him ready by the middle portion of the season.
Yeah, is it fair to say that maybe Hilton's spot is a little tied to Sutton's play? Because if Sutton doesn't get on the field or doesn't play well, you know, then the team doesn't really have a comfort option as a backup slot guy. So then it might default to Hilton. But if Sutton does get on the field in the slot and do well, then you have your backup slot. And then I think it might become solely a special teams question. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. But I wonder, you know, because who is your backup slot? I guess, you know, Colbert might say Sensabaugh, but he hasn't done it in Pittsburgh. He's done it in the past, but not in Pittsburgh. There hasn't been any snaps there.
Right. I would visualize Sensabaugh as being your emergency guy on game days. If you lost Gay, if you lost Mike Hilton, you know, are they going to play some dime this year? Are we going to see more dime this year?
I don't know. I've seen it once in camp. I haven't seen it in a game yet. I mean, I think everything looks good on paper, but you got to figure out exactly who that dime guy is. Is it Hilton? And, you know, how do you deal with these big tight ends then if you're putting a 5'8 corner as your dime guy? I think you'll see some of it. I just don't know the amount. I don't know exactly who it's going to be. I don't know against which team. So I can give you the most generic answer possible.
Carrying on with a few things that Keith Butler said, this comes courtesy of Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, talking about Brown versus Burns. They can't let him win all the time, basically saying A-B. We have to win some of them. Artie was doing that. He was about 50-50 with him, I think, before he got hurt. The guy's covering him now is an easy thing for him. He says it's easy for him. It pisses me off when he says it's easy for him. I like to be competitive. I want A-B to be as good as he can, because he's going to doggone help us. we've got to have somebody who can get close to covering him. Artie was probably our closest one, but we have to have more than one to do it. He goes on to later say, you know, we're still in the making. You know, in so many instances, you know, so many words, Butler saying, A.B. spinning everybody into the ground like a top, except for Artie Burns half the time.
And that's what we've been saying. All of practice, Burns is the only one that's really given A.B. a challenge. I hadn't even seen the comment yet. It's funny that Butler said he's 50-50. He is. Burns is literally 50-50. You know, I've been talking about the stat, you know, Brown against Burns is 11-22 with no touchdowns. So that's literally 50-50, and everybody else is just – I think Brown has like 7 touchdowns and a 75% catch percentage versus Cockrell and Sensabaugh. So Burns is the only guy that's given a challenge, and that's so exciting to see the growth from year one to year two. And then, like Butler said, and like we've talked about, you know, as soon as Burns faces less talented receivers than AB, which is basically any other receiver in the world, it's going to be that much easier for Burns, and he's going to excel.
Butler went on to say that Burns' style of play might provide the defense the most flexibility, and once again sounds ready to mix and match coverages with his zone concepts. He says it means we can play different defenses. We can put a little bit of pressure on the quarterback. It's not just going to be an easy throw and catch for the quarterback to pick up and throw it outside, throw it inside against zone defense or stuff like that. We've got to be able to change it up a little bit. Glory, can I get an amen? Can I get a hallelujah? Look, I mean, how many times have we seen first and 10? You know, just these easy pitch and catches for, you know, 5, 6, 7 yards, setting up those second and short and type situations. They've got to be. This is nothing new to anybody listening to this show. We've talked about it. It's been the hot topic all off season. They've got to run the risk of being beat over the top in order to not give up so many easy yards on early downs, because this has become, the NFL has become a very much take what you give us type of league, especially with offenses and, runs, passes, really no difference on early downs if they're high percentage throws. You know, it used to be all teams did was want to run and get 3 or 4 yards on first down and then go from there. That's not the way the NFL is now these days. The way you win games is you have to make quarterbacks beat you, but not beat you with taking what you give them. You got to have them beat you by pushing the football down the field, either between the numbers on short intermediate throws or down the side over the top. And that's my opinion of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the opinion of the majority of Steelers Nation right now. You know, the Steelers zone, you know, cover three philosophy works against bad to average quarterbacks. But when you obviously face the elite guys that are comfortable with, you know, taking 5 yards on a curl every time and being able to run and extend 11 to 15 play drives, which not a lot of quarterbacks and offenses can do consistently throughout a whole game, then you get carved up. And that's why this team has had such a big problem with Tom Brady in the past. So you just get picked apart. I've said it so many times. It's not just about being a press man team and running man 85% of the time. Nobody in the league runs man 85% of the time. But it's about being varied in coverage and having the ability to shadow top receivers and give different looks and not being so predictable. So it's harder to scout your defense, and your self-scouting, you know, you're not as predictable in down and distance situations. And that was another big reason why Brady carved up Pittsburgh last year. It wasn't just because of zone. It was because they were predictable in what they were calling against the different looks that Patriots would give. So, you know, and it's not just about the corners pressing too. It's about the linebackers being physical in coverage and rerouting these guys. Too many times in the past, you know, these guys down the seam, these crossing routes, they come in unimpeded. No one's bumping them at all. And you don't disrupt the timing that way. Now what I'm seeing, and this is kind of one reason why I like Vince Williams out there in coverage, and I saw it against the Giants in the preseason game, is that he is physical. He will reroute these guys and bump them off their spot. And all you need is a little, you know, extra half second that the receiver has to take or change his path or whatever to kind of throw a play off. So it has to happen on a lot of different levels. It's not just the corners. It's going to have to be the safeties. It's going to have to be the linebackers, the defensive line giving good contain and creating the opportunity for pressure. But now I'm excited the way this defense is going. I do have one concern, though, Dave, and I'll mention it really quick because I'm rambling. But, you know, in 2015, the first game of the year against New England, it was obviously a mess. But one of the bigger problems Butler circled back to was that his whole defense never got a chance to play together in the preseason. And we're having some of those problems again with all the injuries this team has. Mike Mitchell has barely played. We've seen Bud Dupree miss a lot of times. You know, Burns has missed some time. Sean Davis has missed time. I mean, the list goes on and on. Shazier's missed a lot of time. Hopefully we're early. Guys are going to get back, hopefully. But, you know, I am a little worried that this defense hasn't gotten a chance to play together, because I think that's kind of a crucial component to a good start to the year.
Well, yeah, not only during practice time, but the preseason as well, too. Hopefully Mitchell gets back in time for that third preseason game. I don't know, though. If you looked around, and I'm not saying it's okay, but if you looked around the league, I wonder how many starting 11s, how much, you know, if one or two pieces of that group, you know, has missed time during the preseason. You know, it happens. But obviously, and Butler talked about it several years ago. Mitchell, what was it, his first or second? Maybe it was his first year with the Steelers. About him missing all that time during training camp and all that. Because communication is a big, big part of. NFL defenses. And, Mike Tomlin talked a little bit about that yesterday during his press conference about, you know, how Jordan Dangerfield evidently is becoming more of a better communicator. It goes back to things Mitchell said about things that happened last year with having those young players on the field. We'll never know because we don't know all the calls, but how many times were those guys just not lined up right? I'll tell you what, it happened a couple of times in that game against the Ravens earlier in the season, and Sean Davis was one of them,
Yeah.
And Butler said Butler or Lake said as much after that game. You've got to have people know what they're doing and in the right places, and everybody do their job and not trying to do someone else's job, because that's where you run into trouble. So, yeah, it is a little bit worrisome that, you got a first-year player in Hilton running around out there. You got Mike Mitchell not out there. You've got a guy like Robert Golden having to fill in for Mitchell. Sean Davis is still second year. Artie Burns, second year. You got a new inside linebacker, even though he started before, and Vince Williams. Ryan Shazier's missed a ton of practices now. So is it? Bud Dupree, as you said, missing some time. You got a rookie at one side in T.J. Watt. We don't know how often or how early he's going to play. So, yeah, I mean, you would like your full 11 out there, I think more often. Than not, and it is a little bit concerning, but a lot of these guys do have experience now, albeit most of them just 1 year. It just comes down to this, in my opinion, man. You got to get, if you can get pressure with four man up front, Alex, and if you can make that quarterback hold on to that football half a second longer because you're probably playing some press man on the outside, some things are going to happen.
Yeah, no, that's certainly what it comes back to. And you're right. The counterpoint to my point I was going to make is that it's twofold. One is more experience. Burns, Davis have, time under their belt now. And, that 2015 was Butler's first year. So it was a whole new system, some new verbiage. It was a brand new experience. And so obviously guys in Butler's system are comfortable with it now. And there's probably, quicker communication, and that process is expedited. So it's not as big a concern, but that thought still rattles around in my mind. But we'll see what happens. You guys can get healthy third game. Like you said, there's still a lot of time here.
And look, this defense, I mean, go back to last year, and just from the statistical aspect of that average net yards per passing attempt, this team started off horrible. Midway through the season was still bad, but they made some improvement during the second half of the year. Now, you can chalk it up to competition or because sure, it helps to play Cleveland in there a couple of times. But that we did see things on tape that matched statistics later on in the season there. Obviously, the game against the Cowboys, more run associated failures, in my opinion, than pass failures. But I think if this team can get off to a more consistent start against the pass this year, and really, how can it be as bad as it was starting the year last year? If you ask me, I think they're going to be in good shape. I think this defense will be better than the finished product last year by how much. I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and guarantee this a top 10 defense, but I mean, if you can just be up there in that top, closer to top 10 maybe than top 15, and if you can get some sacks and get some turnovers and get some consistent pressures, it's going to make a huge difference this year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm right there with you, and it should be better. It has to be better. If it's not, then there's certainly a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, somebody. If this defense is worse, then Keith Butler and some of these guys need to worry about job security, for sure. All right, fill us in on some of these base number snaps from the Giants game.
Yes, this is one of the top things I want to talk about. It is the preseason, just game one. I mean, I recognize that, but. What's super interesting, I think, maybe the most interesting thing I learned from the Giants game, at least defensively, on Friday, Dave, is that against 11 personnel, which is three wide receiver sets, the most common personnel grouping that any NFL team is going to see over the year, there were 53 of them the Giants ran, 53 11 personnel sets. Of those 53, the Steelers stayed in their base 3-4 defense 32 times. That is 60.4% of the time. And just to give a number, last year, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but I think against 11 personnel last year regular season, the Steelers were in base against it about 6% of the time. So obviously you're seeing a crazy jump to that. And it wasn't even just the backups late in the game. When it was late in the game, the Steelers actually stayed in their nickel because the Giants are in their two-minute offense and trying to catch up. So most of this happened early in the game with the game close, competitive, and the starters still in. I've written about this in the past, is because there's been a lot of talk about, should you play 3-3-5? Should you have extra outside linebackers on the field, or this, that, and the other? And I've said I think the solution here is to stay in base against 11 personnel more often, because you can get Hargrave on the field because Hargrave deserves those snaps. Your nickel run defense is going to be a whole lot better. The Steelers allowed 4.8 yards per carry against nickel last year. And you have a guy like Sean Davis, who has a cornerback background, that can roll down over the slot. It's not the ideal situation for him, but I think it works. So I'll shut up now. I want to get your thoughts, Dave, on what do you make of this? Does this sound important for it being preseason game one? And is this something you'd like to see going forward?
Well, I tell you, and Matthew Marksey did a film room this morning on Javon Hargrave. I know it was only a handful of snaps that he played, but... damn, he sure looked good, didn't he? With that tilted nose. I mean, he is a guy that not only against the run, but against the pass as well, too. It's, you talk about gap penetrators. This guy can do it. And whether or not against the pass or whether or not against the run. So you got to try to get him on the field. And if you're in base only – what'd you say last year? 20% of the time?
Yeah, right around there.
I mean, let's assume everybody stays healthy, because you're not going to pull, you might pull Tuitt and Hayward off the field here and there, but ideally, you're going to want them on the field. So what's 20% of 1,000 snaps?
Yeah, 200.
I mean, you got to get him on the field more than that, right?
Right, and Lulu is going to get his snaps at end. So Hargrave will get some nickel snaps, but they're going to be far and few between. It's not going to justify the talent that he has.
So the best way to keep him on the field is to play that base. And like you said, though, you could probably do some things, right, by putting Vince Williams off and putting TJ on the field in this place, right?
Well, I wouldn't even do that. I would just keep your base out there, because I'm worried about too many moving pieces and putting Watt in places he hasn't played before. I think this is a better solution than people that suggest 3-3-5, which is not going to happen, or three outside linebackers or any kind of other combination. I think staying in the stuff that is a better way to go.
What are you doing on 3rd and 7, middle of the game? You're up by 3 points.
Well, against 11 personnel.
11 personnel.
Yeah, you go nickel. You're not going to do this 60% of the time. That would be absurd. But if you do this instead of 6% last year, you do this 15% of snaps last year, then I think that's a better way to do it.
You're talking what are you doing on 2nd and 7? Balls on, first quarter, balls near midfield,
Against 11 personnel?
Against 11 personnel.
It's going to be a game plan thing, depending on who's a better rushing offense, who is their slot receiver, what kind of coverages do I want to run. But in that situation, I would be more open to staying in base, depending on who I'm playing against.
Right, and that's the way I thought you'd go. So you're not going to do, you're going to keep your personnel I mean, can you really? I mean, I guess. I mean, we're headed that way, but you know, and Lawrence Timmons sure did it. But you know, I guess you're really thinking that Vince Williams is going to play 90% of the snaps this year if he stays healthy.
Unless they really find a dime guy they're comfortable with, you know, who is your dime defender today, Dave, with your roster construction, and who do you think is that guy?
Well, I mean, Cardinal Lake's already told us he likes Hilton as a dime back, so I'm cheating, you know?
Okay, so do you think Mike Hilton's going to play more than 10% of the defensive snaps this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not ready to go there yet. Let's watch a little bit more, you know.
And there's your answer about Vince Williams playing 90%.
Yeah. No, I do like maybe thinking about, you know, as the season wears on, maybe, you know, maybe getting both Harrison and Watt, you know, on the field together along with Dupree and you know, maybe getting Vince off that way, you know, on obvious, you know, passing downs because you can.
So who replaces Vince in this situation? Which linebacker, which outside guy?
It'd be Watt, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not something you're going to see a lot of. You know, obviously, we're going to see at times Watt line up inside, you know.
Sure.
Just, you know, we saw it for several years. We've seen Jarvis, you know, move over into the middle of the defense. Normally, those that's coming on prime passing downs, though, right?
Yeah, they're third down while those stack linebackers, they'll trade outside linebacker, inside linebacker responsibilities. I mean, they'll do some crazy stuff, but I don't know.
I think we're going to see a lot of that? No, but, you know, I watch the more, you know, Watt's a good inside rusher. He really is.
Yeah, I'm thinking more about it from a coverage standpoint. If you're replacing Vince, who's going to do well in coverage?
Well, you know, I think Watt's more athletic. I mean,
he's more athletic, but that's not to say I'll end all in coverage.
Right, right. And I look, obviously, I don't think this is, you know, it might happen twice, you know. I mean, it's not going to happen a lot. But, I mean, I do think, though, we're going to see Watt during his rookie season, though, line up some, probably about the same that we saw Jarvis the last couple of years percentage-wise because, he's such a good rusher. And until Watt becomes a more accomplished, you know, pass rusher when it comes to the edge and all, you know, when he's able to run that rip, when he's able to run that push pull and be able to have more of a consistent counter to go to, you know, he's going to be somewhat limited. I mean, he's going to win in ways like he won against the Giants the other night.
Yeah, it's going to be an effort thing. It's going to be a strength thing. It's going to be rushing smart and not getting yourself run up the arc, which I think Watt did a really good job of against the Giants, was that although he didn't always win the edge, he was able to counter inside, not just hopelessly windmill up the arc the way Jarvis Jones would. Now, I agree that Watt's going to move around. If he's playing outside linebacker, you know, 50% of the time, he's going to be used like anybody else. You're not going to make an exception for him. So he's going to play off ball. He's going to stunt. He's going to line up stacked on the left side with two outside linebackers. He did that at least once against the Giants. So he's definitely going to move around some. I just, you know, the idea of, you know, using him in Vince Williams' role, like Vince Williams' role, that's a little stretching it for me.
Yeah, what I'm saying is just, you know, occasionally, obviously.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
I'm not talking about pulling Vince out for him.
Yeah, but I really like my idea. Maybe I should call it my idea. Maybe I'm being self-serving, but I like the idea of staying in base against 11 personnel a little more often.
And we'll see. I mean, obviously we have the charting numbers from last year. Go back through those and see what they did. You know, versus base versus, you know, nickel personnel.
6%.
Really?
Yep, it was 2.6 in 2015. It went up to about 6.5% last year, and I think that was going to double this year, to be honest.
During the preseason, they were in base.
During the preseason. I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about regular season, base versus nickel.
Yeah, I was wondering about preseason.
Oh, I have to know. I'm not sure on any preseason stuff.
Yeah. Now, what were the numbers that you just quoted out for the regular season?
Regular season base defense versus 11 personnel last year was 6.4%, I think.
Okay, all right, and that's very important for people to note what you said there versus 11 personnel.
Yes, like 20% total base or 25% for the whole season against anything.
It'd be interesting. I know you got the charts there somewhere from last year. Go back and see what they've done the last 2 years. gets 11 during the preseason. You know, to see if we got any something new here. But it is interesting. It's going to be something worthwhile. It'll give us something to look at the next three preseason games. That's for sure. Okay, moving on into the game against the Falcons. We're probably going to see what Ben. Two series, right? Maybe three?
Yeah, probably two. I mean, limited out there, but limited.
Were you ready for Keith Butler, Mike Tomlin to get Hayward to it and Hargrave off the field the other night? Were you wondering?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. They played a little long, didn't they?
They sure did. I was like, you know, what the heck? Are we trying to win this thing or what?
Yeah, they got money on this game or something. Yes, I don't know.
Exactly. Somebody had the plus four there, but I was like, good. I've seen enough. Get them out of there. We'll probably see that group though. 2-3 series again. It'll be a good test. I hope the Falcons play their. Play their main guys in this one because this is obviously one of the better offenses in the league. They can use the backs out of the backfield. They've got great physical receiver in Julio Jones and great secondary receiver over there and third wide receiver. Good young tight end and that Austin Cooper turned out. I knew he was going to be something. I like those tight ends that can kind of do it all and. And he really it was impressive last year. I think he's going to have a great season this year. So I'm really looking forward to probably this second preseason game more than any of them. Yeah, I know the third one is a tune-up game, but I think this will be a good test for the starters.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, I want to throw something kind of crazy out to you. I don't want to be this guy, but I am going to be this guy. One cornerback, because, we assume that Trumaine Johnson is not in the fold. But and while I don't think this is likely, because any trade is unlikely, I did read a report today that the Saints are putting Dell cornerback Delvin Brio on the trading block. This is a CFL kid the Steelers worked out in 2015, and I don't know the timeline exactly, but I think that Rick Reprise, who's with the Steelers right now in a senior scouting position, was the director of college scouting with the Saints when Brio came around. So there's a little connection there. So I know I had the Saints, Travis Cadet, Justin Hunter idea before the camp started, but I just want to throw out Delvin Brio's name as, just something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah, at this stage of the process. So, I mean, look, they have traded for guys in the past, right?
Yeah, the Boykin deal. I'm just, it's unlikely, of course. I don't want to get anyone too crazy. Hilton and Allen have played well, but Brio's got some talent. Steelers liked him. There's a front office connection there. He's available, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath, but obviously more likelihood than that than Trumaine Johnson there. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to a couple of questions here on Twitter. If Golson, this is from Travis Herko, if Golson does get cut, will he be named amongst the 10 biggest draft busts the Steelers by the Steelers knowing his talent potential? Boy, potential is a dangerous word, and especially when we haven't seen, I haven't even seen him play on a football field since he left Ole Miss, but up there, biggest draft bust. At least Ricardo Coakley got on the field a little while, right?
I don't think Golson's top 10. I mean, you could go through a ton of other names. Tim Worley, Gary Glick, Troy Edwards. You could throw his name out there, though he might not be as big a bust. I don't know.
It would be up there. Linus Swede.
Stevens, that was his name, right? The tackle. He was probably the biggest bust.
What round was Tony Hills drafted in? Wasn't he fourth?
The
round
third. Out? Yeah, he's not going to count.
Fourth rounders don't count. I mean, you have to limit that at first or second round picks, right?
Yeah. So what? Huey Richardson was he? Was that who the guy? What linebacker am I thinking of?
Yeah, that probably him. Wow.
I don't know if you count Gabe Rivera, you know, with the car accident.
No,
he has some talent.
Who was Alonzo Jackson?
Yeah, Alonzo Jackson. Sure.
Look, Golson's going to be in. It's going to be. You can make a good argument that Golson deserves to be in there. You know, now how many years you want to go back? I don't know, but look, it's very disappointing any way you look at this thing with Golson, and you know, injuries are injuries, and you know. There's no way around it. I mean, is he a draft bust because of injuries, or you know, do you consider a bust because of injuries or because of play? You know,
go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, poor play is one thing. Either you missed scouted the talent, you know, and the guy just can't play on Sundays. You know, the thing is, we don't know that with Golson. You know. Is this just a case of, you know, the guy got injured? It's just a bad luck pick because you don't even know if your scouting was on or off.
I think injured guys can still be considered busts because a bust is you just didn't get return on your value, and clearly the Steelers have not. But I think if you were to rank them, if you had one guy with an injury history who never, you know, who busted, and another guy who with no injury history but poor play that was a bust, the guy with poor play ranks above the injury because you saw him on the field, you saw him healthy, you saw that talent or lack thereof come to light. So if you compare to, you know, Jarvis Jones versus Enquest Golson, for me, Jarvis is the bigger bust because he was on the field, we saw his play, and it was so poor versus Golson, who we never saw play. But they're both can still be considered busts.
All right, this one's from Tim Parker. I'm pleased to see that the cornerback positions have turned into a real competition. At this point, what cornerbacks do you see making the 53? Tim, you know, mine are right there on my latest 53-man roster that I put up on Sunday there. And they, of course, are Artie Burns, Ross Cockrell, Cody Sensabaugh, William Gay, Cameron Sutton, and Mike Hilton. I've got six of them on there. Alex, do you differ with me on any of those?
I still got to think about that last spot. That's the only one that's going to be debated, of course, Hilton versus Allen. I had Allen on my last one, and I think Allen's played better, so I don't know if I'm compelled to change it. And, you know, just to go back to the conversation, because I keep thinking back to it, Dave, you know, we talked about who is the backup slot guy, and if we assume for a second it's not Sutton, and we think about Hilton, while, yes, Hilton has gotten those reps in camp, would the team really play Hilton in a game over Cody Sensabaugh, a more known veteran guy?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, because, you know, I think Sensabaugh will get slot reps once the season starts and your rosters are limited and you just don't have the guys to, you know, you don't have a 90-man roster anymore. I don't know. You know, I think we have to think about that as well.
All right, from Tylenol Jones on Twitter, if it came down to Ayers or Brian Allen, who gets the final roster spot? That's an easy one for me, and I think it is for you as well.
Is it? I don't know. I don't know where you're. I don't even know which way you're going.
All right. Well, what's your choice?
I gotta see these guys in stadiums. You know, I really like Ayers' game. But if he can't get healthy, though, I do think he's gonna be ready for the Falcons game. You know, he's gonna do well on punt returns. So I don't want to. Right now, I mean Allen, just because I have to see Ayers work more as a punt returner. But that could change.
Yeah, look, I, you know, Ayers outside of punt return value, which we don't even know if he has or not. To me, that's kind of where it ends right now. You know, I think Allen can give you a little bit more potentially on special teams. I like his upside as a cornerback more so than I think I like Ayers' upside as a wide receiver right now. So to me, it's a no-brainer. I'm taking Brian Allen in that situation there. From Adam Grego, how high of hopes do you have for Brian Allen? It's become the Brian Allen Depot show. how high of hopes do you have for Brian Allen developing opposite Burns and giving Pittsburgh two long press corners? Is he another late-round cornerback dud? You've seen him a lot more than I have, Alex.
Well, I've been impressed with his progression. You know, he had a really bad start to camp, and he's gotten a lot better both in game. I thought he had a strong practice yesterday. But to be honest, I don't like to think about Brian Allen as a starter 3 years from now, just because that's so far down the road. I just don't like to entertain the idea. So is there potential? Sure, that's why he was drafted. He was drafted on his potential and upside alone, a guy that has 2.5 years playing corner, you know, was a receiver before that. And he's obviously fits the mold that Burns guy that the team looks for. So, yeah, the potential's there, but, you know, I can't quantify that in any logical way at this point.
Yeah, well, we've barely even seen him so far.
Yeah.
Elijah Brown, are we close to seeing Cockrell's ceiling? When do we start looking to get another starting cornerback? Look, Cockrell's been at his ceiling, I think, you know, last year. We saw what we need to see out of Cockrell. And, you see how the Steelers responded to him, only giving him an original round restricted tender. There's no signs that they're going to extend him, prior to the start of the regular season. So, in other words, they're saying, look, you know, we've seen enough out of you, and we're prepared for you to potentially leave us after this season. But in the meantime, he is the starting corner outside opposite Artie Burns. There's going to be limitations with him, I think, in man press. He obviously doesn't have short arms, or he obviously does have shorter arms. To me, he's just a better kind of off defender than man press. And, yeah, I think we have hit his ceiling. I think this is the last season that Ross Cockrell is a starter for the Steelers outside, and he might not make it through the entire season, depending on how he plays.
All right, Dave Bryan, as president of the I Hate Ross Cockrell fan club, I can tell you're doing your work over
which
there.
Which you know damn well, and I'm not.
I'm going to say it anyway. I'm going to have my own narrative. No, I know. We obviously have our disagreement on Cockrell. I think this year will be his best year.
Has he hit a ceiling?
I think this year will be his ceiling. I think he can improve slightly from where he was at last year.
Okay.
That's where I'm at.
Is he the Steelers' starting cornerback in 2018?
I think there's a chance, which you don't seem to really be open to. But it's all going to be, of course, dependent on his play this year. So I can't make a conclusion either way.
Assuming he stays healthy, does he start all every game this year?
Yes.
All right. Why didn't teams come after him with only an original round tender on him? Look, I didn't see it as a big risk when it happened. A lot of people saying, oh, the Steelers gambled and won in that situation. But I mean,
yeah, but how many teams go after guys with any tender? Right? I mean, how many teams put an offer sheet in this year on anybody?
True,
guy got an offer.
Right, and it's important to remember that a fourth round pick is still very much valued.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, teams don't like to give up draft picks, and it was a good cornerback market in free agency, so teams went after that. It was a very good cornerback class in the draft, so teams look at it and say, we want to give up a fourth round pick for Cockrell, you know, on a 1 year deal, or can we go after the big name corner in free agency, or can we wait in the draft and get a really good corner on a rookie deal for dirt cheap and have him for 4 to 5 years, you know? So there's a lot of factors in there. It was not a surprise that Cockrell didn't get interest, but it doesn't mean he's a bad player.
From buddy photographer Tim Rice, has my boy DHB lost his upper hand on the 53? Boy, I do love Hunter over DHB, and I never thought I'd say that. But can he beat Coates to the 53? It's going to be interesting to watch this thing out. You can make some arguments for DHB needing to be number six because of his special teams play. There's no way around that. But DHB, I don't think, gives you anything more than that. Hunter doesn't give you anything on special teams, but I think he gives you more as a depth wide receiver. The thing becomes, is he far enough down that depth chart that he's not going to get a helmet if he makes the 53? Coates, who the hell knows? You know, he's got to get healthy. Are we talking about the first five-game Coates last year? Are we talking about the guy that maybe has lost confidence that might struggle getting back from that injury there? So I have DHB on the outside looking in. I have Coates and Hunter making it as numbers five and six right now.
Yeah, I still think DHB is going to make it because he brings something no other receivers do on this roster to the extent that he does. But he's not having a good camp. It's been tough for him. He's got too many drops. You know, that's kind of resurfacing. But I still think he makes it.
From our buddy Spencer Crick, which player or players have not lived up to expectations?
You know, I think Kobe had a good game, but I thought his camp overall had been pretty poor. Were there expectations for McCullers? I don't even know at this point. He has not lived up to any expectations, if there were any in the first place. I don't know if there's a major disappointment, though. Maybe I'm looking at it with black and gold colored glasses, but you know, there's no one that sticks out to me and says, wow, this guy was just completely awful.
Where is Xavier Grimble right now? Is what you thought you'd see going into training camp and what you've actually seen?
Yeah, that's probably a good point. You steered me in the right direction. I think tight end has been a little underwhelming. Jesse had a nice catch yesterday, kind of the play of the day, but you're looking for more out of him. You're looking for more out of Grimble, you know, so that my level of confidence in the tight end group has gone down slightly from what we started at the beginning of camp.
All right, Ken Yeager, do we see Le'Veon in camp next after the second preseason game? Boy, I hope so, Ken. I think it's going to be either right before or right after that third preseason game would be my best guess, and that's all it is a guess there. From observing on Twitter, who are you the most optimistic about after the first preseason game? Also, who are you optimistic about that didn't play in that game?
Oh, I still have high hopes for Dupree. You know, I can't wait to get Dupree in a game, though. I'm incredibly excited for that. So I really hope that happens against the Falcons. I hope it will. What was the first part of that question? Who I was disappointed with?
Who are you the most optimistic about after the first preseason game?
Okay, most optimistic. Oh, man.
Matt Filer.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's kind of, you know, I think he is what he is. He's going to be a practice squad guy. I thought Brian Allen, though, you know, just because he showed me some stuff in game that I didn't see in practice. And, you know, that's tough to do. Usually it's the other way around. Guys look good in practice, and then in game they kind of forget their technique and they go back to what they've done in the past. So I'll say Brian Allen.
Yeah, I thought Jacob Hagan did some nice things in that game as well too. You know, mm-hmm. fringe guys here. You know what we're talking about, I think. But okay, we've been on the line together an hour and 10 minutes. So.
I got to say one other thing though, because this is going around. It's totally false. If anyone sees, I'm sure it's been posted everyone Facebook. I've seen it. The quote, and I'm using air quotes, from James Harrison talking about the Colin Kaepernick situation, that is a false quote. That was debunked last year. It's going around the internet again. Don't believe it. James Harrison never said any comment about that.
Yeah, I saw that's resurfaced by, and now a couple of, Jeremy Roenick.
I just saw that and responded to it. That's written by Happy Gilmore's website. It's false. Read bylines, people.
Oh, Lord have mercy. We're back where we started, complaining about media and some of these reports. So we managed to go full circle here on this Monday podcast. Okay, Alex, you'll be back out at La Trobe. In fact, you'll probably be leaving here in another hour or so. You'll file your report later on this evening. You and I will get on another podcast later on this evening and talk about what you saw. That's going to be much shorter tonight, people, I guarantee you, because these things are starting to run together on us here. But in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex Kozora at Alex_Kozora. Follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what you hear and you want to donate to the cause, please go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up right navigational bar. Alex, I'll talk to you in a few hours, buddy. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.